Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Health Radio. I am your host, Pamela Crane. Focus on Health is dedicated to encouraging choices for healthy mind, bodies, and souls. We do not prescribe or recommend. Information is provided for educational purposes only. Today's guest is Marilyn R. Rathbun, former zookeeper for the LA Zoo and Botanical Gardens. It has been such an interest to me that Marilyn is a graduate from Azusa Pacific University with a major in biology and has such an innate sense of understanding between herself and animals. It's just been a wonderful thing to see. She's a married mom, runs a little side clothing business, and most importantly is a Christian. And this is, music is dedicated to her. Thought we'd do that a little bit of Africa. How did you like that, Marilyn?
I love that.
Well, welcome. And I'm really, really excited to get started. When I first met you, I met you at Poema Fellowship in Costa Mesa. And you just have such a vibrant, outgoing personality and such a cute sense of humor. I mean, I get that. And I was so, so glad and so interested to hear about what you do for, or what you had done for a living. I just want to get started and say, start with your first real recollection in college of why it is you majored in biology.
Well, I majored in biology very intentionally because I wanted to work with animals. From the time I was just a little kid, I always wanted, that's all I wanted to do, was work with animals. And so that was just kind of always the plan. I know a lot of people don't know when they're young, but I kind of knew what I wanted to do. And I'd always kind of had that gifting. And my mom had steered me that direction. My mom was a big animal lover. We always had tons of pets in the house. And so it was just kind of how I grew up. And the big thing that steered me, silly as this is I saw Jaws. When I was, you know, I think I was about 7 years old when Jaws came out.
Oh my gosh.
I fell in love with sharks. I fell in love with them. Rather than get scared, I wanted to become a marine biologist from then on. And so everything kind of went that direction.
Wow. I can't imagine that. I'm, you know what, personally, I am really scared of sharks. I mean, I'm an animal person too, but that is a true love for animals, because to see that and to really understand it must be something else. I know that you had mentioned that when you're with the animals, you feel like you're in another land or that you're at peace. And that has to be.
It is. When I first started to volunteer at the zoo, because you have to volunteer for a very long time usually before you get hired, I used to volunteer and I'd be in an enclosure raking or scrubbing something, which most people wouldn't find fun at all, right? And I was just thinking back to, like, in Chariots of Fire when the character said, "I feel his pleasure when I run." And I was like, I feel his pleasure when I'm cleaning enclosures and feeding animals and, you know, all doing that. And so, you know, I knew I was in the right place.
Well, that's really cool. That's the next question I was going to ask you. What was a day like at the zoo? I mean, it must be like being responsible for the wild animals, like being responsible for very determined teams with superpowers. That was my thought. I'm thinking, like, what is that like?
It was gloriously amazing and fun. It ridiculously hard. Things that it's for everybody, because, like, it's a lot of hard work. We would come in the morning. You always, all your animals, to make sure that they're all, you know, they're all alive and healthy and doing well and all of that. And then we, in our area, would weigh all of our, I was at the bird show, so we would weigh all of our birds every day, or most of them.
Oh.
And that, for birds, that can be a really good health indicator, because birds will hide symptoms of sickness for a long, long time, because in the wild, if you show symptoms of being sick, you'll get preyed upon. So they hide it. And so we would, one of the ways you can tell if they're healthy, if they're doing well, is you would weigh them. So every morning we would weigh them. And also it allowed us just to monitor that they were all at healthy weights. And it was a good opportunity, because each bird was taken out and handled or looked at closely. How are you doing today? Are you off? Are you doing great? You know, do you seem like you are ailing in some way? Whatever. So it was a good way for us to check their condition every day. And so we would weigh them, and then we would clean. Since we were a show area, we had a limited time to clean. So we had to really work hard and quick. And we would rake all the dirt enclosures. We would scrub things down. We would hose, and we would hose sometimes in 30-something degree weather, you know, and it would be really cold, or we worked in extreme heat, you know, all of that. We would set up for our shows, which could take 30 minutes to an hour just to set up, putting the birds in their show areas where they would be released from for the show. So all the show birds had to be moved into their spots and all of that. We had to make all their diets for the day. Each individual bird's diet was prepared in the mornings. Then we would do our shows. And, of course, in between all of that, if we had a bird that needed to be looked at by a vet for some reason, we had vets coming, or if we had a bird that happened to be not doing so well and they were up in the health center, we would also go up and visit those animals and spend time with them. We also had to look after their psychological well-being, so we would do what's called behavioral enrichment, which could be stuffing boxes full of newspaper and letting them shred them, like for the parrots, because that was really fun, or just anything that would let them behave more like they were out in the wild. It could be putting, a mammal, it could be putting scents around the exhibit to stimulate them. You know, it could be all sorts of different things, but that was also a priority for us, is to make sure that they're not just physically cared for in an absolutely excellent way, but also psychologically cared for and given attention that they need and all of that. So it was a busy day. It was a very full day. We came home very tired and very dirty.
I bet. It has to be very demanding. That was leading to my next question. Each, like you said, each animal has different needs, and each animal within the species probably has a different personality. I mean, they're probably majorly the same, but they probably have different personalities, right?
Oh, they do. I mean, you know, even amongst all of our parrots, we had the ones that were prone to get into more trouble than others. Like, we had one that could unlatch his enclosure, and if we forgot to put a clip in his enclosure handle, he would he'd open it up and come walking into our office, like, hi, you know, things like that, where you'd have to be, you know, we're like, oh, okay, you know, and he always came right to us because that's who he wanted to be with. But, you know, every animal, some are smarter than others. Some, you know, are more prone to getting into trouble than others. You know, they're all individuals. Some of them like certain keepers more than they like other keepers. And in our case, we had to be very careful because parrots will bond with one person. And we all had to handle them all without getting bit or anything like that. So we had to be very careful that we didn't go out and just spend a ton of time with one parrot that we just loved and, you know, cuddle and really get it to like us more than everybody else, because anyone else would walk in, you know, to load it out for the show or something, and they would get bit because, you have to have that relationship with everybody, with a certain bird. So, you know, they're all different. They've all got their own personalities, just like our kids do, just like we do. And, you know, some are more crotchety than others. Some are more affectionate than others. And, you know, it's just, and so we had to gear how we cared for them for each individual, you know.
Well, you know what? How do you ease into something like this? Did you go straight from Azusa Pacific University to this position? Or how did you ease into being with wild animals? Going into wild animals, do you feel God had something to do with this?
God had everything to do with it. It was one of those things that when I came out of school and I had a bio degree, I knew where I wanted to get. Like, I wanted a job where I was interacting with the animals, but I didn't know how to get to that point. I really had no clue. And so I started in a graduate program for a short while that was in marine biology, but it was basically studying biochemistry of deep sea animals, which I quickly realized was not, it was not what I wanted to do. It wasn't touching my heart. It was completely different. So I quit, and people thought I was crazy because it was a great program, but it wasn't where I was supposed to be. So I found out about a program in Moor Park called the Exotic Animal Training and Management Program, or EDAM as they call it. And I got accepted, which was back then very hard to do, and I got in. But the problem was my financial aid fell through. So here I thought, I'm finally going to get my dream. This is where animal trainers and zookeepers and everybody come to learn their trade. And I had to leave, and it was heartbreaking. And I just, it was very hard at that time, and I had to just trust that God knew what he was doing and that eventually I was going to get my dream, and I had to just persist at it. And so what I did at that point is I went to the zoo, because I knew that the EDAM people did their volunteer hours at the Los Angeles Zoo. So I went over there and just begged them to let me volunteer, even though I knew nothing. You know, because a biology degree is great, but it doesn't really teach you how to be a zookeeper per se. That's a real hands-on kind of thing. And I had none of that experience. And they took me on anyway, kind of because they felt sorry for me, I think. And I ended up volunteering.
Do you think God influences? Do you think God influences minds and hearts and things?
Oh, yes.
I mean, because sometimes people make choices and you think, gosh, I do not understand.
Yeah.
And there you
Why
go.
Why did you do that?
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
So I that's what happened. And I ended up volunteering there for 4 years. And I also volunteered at the Marine Mammal Care Center doing marine mammal rescue for 4 years, getting all that hands-on knowledge and experience. And eventually, and even then, a lot of people try and try and try, and they never get hired because there's so many people wanting those jobs. But I do believe that God opened that door. So eventually I got it. You know?
He gives favor, doesn't he? When he gives favor,
yeah.
it's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
So the door opened, you got it, and were you just terrified? Of course, you had been volunteering, right? So you knew a little bit about animals?
By then, I mean, I was comfortable. I was fairly comfortable, you know, cleaning enclosures and that sort of thing. Where I had a challenge was they put me with the bird show pretty much right after I started, because that's where they needed help. And I loved birds. I liked birds, but I didn't know that much about them, and that is an area where you do a lot of handling, more so than any other area probably, because it's a show string and all the birds are trained. So, you know, my first couple days, I'm like, you're going to put a hawk on my arm? What? <You know? laughs> Really? Or the condor that can shred my skin? Really? I'm going to run the condor back to, okay. You know, and so there were definitely, I think I had a vulture on my head, like one of the very first days.
Oh, my
who, you know, they live in a hierarchy, and I went in the cage to rake the dirt for him, and he felt superior because he was up higher than me and came down and tried to scalp me for a second, and someone was right there and said no, and, you know. But, you know, so there, you know, I have a lot of bites on me and different things, but, you know, it, that goes with the territory. It's not a big deal. That day it wasn't anything. I didn't even get the skin broken, so it was nothing. But, you know, it was just, it was a learning curve of getting comfortable around, especially the condors I found was more where I would be more nervous because they were very big and I'm very short.
Yes, yes, yeah. You know, just like getting used to different cultures with their ways. The animals have their own, like you say, their hierarchy, their, you know, pack leader type thing, right?
Yes. Yeah, and they all relate to people and keepers differently. And, you know, like ravens are so brilliantly smart that you really have to be on your toes, you know, when training them. You have to be aware that they'll figure out ways to outsmart you, and they do.
Oh my!
You know.
Oh my goodness.
And so, you know, kind of a funny story, which probably people might enjoy, is we did a show a long time ago. A movie came out called The Wild, and at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood, they always do pre-shows. So our show, our bird show, was picked to do the pre-show, and it was a free-flight bird show in the El Capitan Theater. And the raven was in it, and he did great until one time one kid, I think, threw a piece of popcorn out into the aisle, and he saw it. And after that, and so, and he learned, because he's a raven and they're so smart, so after that, whenever he would be released to come out to the stage, and he was released from the back of the theater and he would go up to the stage, it was a free-for-all. Just absolute mayhem of him trying to get all the popcorn. That was because he realized, oh, it's here. And it only took one time. And I think they actually had to, I don't know, they might have even had to pull him out of that show at that point because they're just too smart. Once he figured that out, it was over, you know.
Well, I see you with all the big owls and everything too, and that's just fascinating to me. Were the owls really fun to handle?
I love, love, love handling owls. I do. We had a couple of great horned owls. We had a small owl, a Hawaiian owl, and she was a feisty little thing, or is, I should say is, she's still there, feisty little thing. And then we also had, as you saw in some of the pictures, a Eurasian eagle owl who was just amazing. We had her from the time she was very young. So when she, you know, when she was in the nursery, we would take human baby toys to the nursery and she'd play, you know, we'd play with her with the toys and she'd chew on them and, you know, that sort of thing. And as she got older, we had to be a lot more careful with her. She got a lot feistier too. Because one thing, you know, as much as we love those animals, they're not like our pets. They're exotic animals. They're wild animals. And you have to have a sense of awe and respect for that. And you have to understand that, you know, you have to be on your toes because they're going to do what animals do. You know, so you might walk in and have something fly at your face or, you know, you just always have to be very vigilant and very careful and very respectful of who they are and what they can do, which we were. And, but you don't ever come out completely unscathed. And that's, you know, small little things. And that's okay, you know.
Did you ever have to wear protective gear with any of them?
Yeah. We would wear, when we would go in with birds of prey, or especially if we would pick up birds of prey, because we were handling them so much, we always had a falconer's glove on for that. Most of the time, we didn't really need to wear anything else. I didn't personally handle the eagles, but those that handled the eagles would put something actually on their upper arm, like, you know, something longer to just protect them from those giant talons. Because, you know, we had some pretty serious, have some pretty serious eagles there. But most of the time that was sufficient. Now, like when we would go in to weigh some of the birds, you know, a couple of them sometimes would be like, I'm going to fly at your face, you know. So I always had my hand, my gloved hand, ready to put in front of my eyes if I needed to, you know, and once in a while I would go no, and I'd put my hand up and they'd hit the hand and, you know, fly back to their perch and be like, no, you can't.
You can't do
you
my
just
face.
Have to be on your toes. Yes, not my face. Land on the scale, not on my face. Thank you. you know, those sorts of things. And that's kind of where animal sense comes in. And that's something that is really important if you're in any kind of career like that. Well, you really can't be in a career like that without animal sense. And that's something that you're not, you don't necessarily learn and often really can't learn. It's kind of an innate thing where you just, you never fully know what an animal is going to do. So you're always on guard, but you can kind of, it's kind of a little bit of a sixth sense in knowing what to do in the moment. You know, what is this animal going to do? What are they thinking? What, you know, and just being able to interact with them in a kind of an innate way. You know, it's kind of hard to explain animal sense perfectly, but you kind of have to have, it's like a giftedness kind of that you kind of need to be born with to understand, you know, just to be able to feel your way through things as well as use the head knowledge that you have, you know.
Well, this should encourage everyone to the fact that I've always felt that God gifts us with certain gifts from the time we're born. I mean, he knows what he's going to give us. And to me, that is a special gifting from him to be able to understand the animals and what they need and how to better meet their needs and know them. I think that's a gift, don't you?
Oh, yeah, it is. And, you know, just like people are born to do all sorts of things, there's definitely a group of people that are born to work with animals. And we're a funny lot, like, you know. When I first started, a lot of people said, well, some people get into this field because they're really good with animals, but they're not so good with people. But I noticed, like, the keepers that I've worked with and been around, the animal people, they're wonderful people. And they care so much about their animals that they're taking care of. They want to do their jobs so well, and they do their jobs so well. It's just an interesting crowd because, like, animals just make us so happy, and so many times other people just don't kind of get us in that regard. They're just like,
I love your sense of humor and that.
That
I love it. I must be an animal person. I must be right there with you because I love it. I think it is an intuitive thing, correct? It's kind of an intuitive communication. I believe there's more than, it's kind of a spiritual link with the animals. And I believe it is an intuitive thing. Don't you?
There is. And like, my supervisor who is so wonderful and is so gifted with birds. It's unbelievable. We used to refer to him as the bird whisperer because he's so gifted. It's ridiculous. It would be so funny because we would be trying to work with an animal, one of the birds, trying to train it to do something or get it to do, I don't know, whatever. And, it, you know, no, it would be not cooperating in the least bit. And then we'd call him over and it would just look at him like, oh, okay, and just do whatever he wanted, you know. No problem. So we're just like, yeah, thanks, you know.
Thanks
but
a
like,
lot,
we'd be,
huh?
Okay, call him over because, you know, we need you, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of I've ridden a horse once or twice or something, but I just don't have what it takes to let the horse know who I am. You know, that's it. No communication there whatsoever. You know, so. Well, I noticed the pictures of you with the owl. You must have trained yourself to turn your head away because you were turning away and it was landing right on your arm. So that must be the face thing. And I noticed that the animals seem very happy when you're around them and to come to you, such as the rhinos. It's almost like if I could caption it, the rhinos looked like they were smiling at you when you were feeding them, and it was really cute. Is that so?
That rhino in particular, he wasn't one that I got to take care of, but he was nearby where I used to work, and his keeper liked to had him target trained to a frisbee. It's really good if you can target train your animals for husbandry purposes, and basically it's husbandry training, so that if their feet need to be worked on or they need to, a vet needs to check them out or whatever, you can target train them or husbandry train them so that they'll be very cooperative, and then it takes all the stress out of that situation, because for them, oh, okay, I'm putting up my foot just like I was trained to do, or I'm opening my mouth just like I was trained to do. So it's not like, oh, scary, why are they doing this to me? You know, it's husbandry training is so important, and that was part of his husbandry training, and so she would let me come over and help her with target train him, which was so fun. Because I love him, and that was such a cool thing to be able to do. But with the birds, with the free flight, our show was, well, it's still going on, but it's a free flight bird show. So basically what we did always with our birds was we used positive reinforcement training at all times. And so basically if they did whatever behavior we were wanting them to do, there was usually a tasty treat waiting for them in some corner of our stadium. So they would get reinforced for that. Now with the parrots, a lot of times we, you know, it was seeds in our pockets. So I swear my washer still has sunflower seeds in it from those years. Because we sometimes forget, my mom would be like, oh no, you know. But they would be, they would get their seeds if they said the word we asked for, or they raised their foot to wave or whatever it was, they'd get a seed, and it was reinforcing for them. The goal in that type of training is to always make the behavior positive, give the bird a positive experience so that they want to fly to that corner of the stadium or they want to fly to you. And it totally is like a relationship built on trust. In order to do that, you have to have a relationship with the animal, especially if they're flying to you. They have to trust you and know that they're not, you know, you're not going to hurt them. You know, you're a happy place to be. And our goal was to always make our theater a very happy, positive place for the birds to be. So when they're flying to different spots, you know, for the birds of prey, often there was a little piece of mouse waiting for them when they got up to their corner or wherever they were supposed to land. And it made it very happy for them, and you know, where they would want to do that. And of course, with parrots are very, you know, they're birds of prey are not nearly social like parrots in that sense. So to them, it wasn't like, oh, I love you and I want to come fly on your arm. It was more like, I want the piece of mouse that's in your glove, you know, and I'll do, and I know you're not going to hurt me and I trust you and I can land on you and feel safe. And so it's all good. With the parrots, it was different because of course they're a lot more social, you know, they're a lot more affection based. And so of course, just talking to them or, you know, and then of course they loved their sunflower seeds. So they get their seeds when they came to us and that, and when I still go to visit, like those, especially the parrots, they still know me and they get very excited because we had that relationship for so long, you know? And so they, some of them freak out when I walk in, they get really excited, as do I, because they're like my children. And so there's that relationship, especially with them, you know?
Oh, that's really sweet. So predatory, that would be my next question. How did you deal with, am I using the right word, the more predatory animals?
Like the raptors, like the birds of prey.
Yeah, they aren't as fond or affectionate. Do they? You think they form any kind of bond with
people? I mean, I think it to some extent, like perhaps in the sense that they trust you. You know, they trust you enough to get to get on your glove, and you know, and that sort of thing. If, you know, so the, in that sense, I don't think that it's in the sense of, oh, I really love you kind of thing, because they're just not built that way. It's just, it, you know, it's not, they're not social animals per se. And so it's not kind of like, oh, I'm just happy because you picked me up kind of thing. They're happy that you picked them up and you gave them a treat or whatever, you know, and that sort of thing. And they're very comfortable, like we were taught how to handle them properly so that they would be very comfortable on the glove where they're not going to be nervous. You want to provide a very steady place for them to have their feet. You know, you don't want to twist your arm back and forth and make it very unstable and very uncomfortable.
So we were
really careful to make them very comfortable with us and on us, you know, but we also wanted to make sure we didn't walk in their enclosures every day and, you know, with a piece of mouse in our hand, because they would associate that. And then next time someone walked in, they might have a burn in their face, you know? So
yeah,
we had to be smart about how we did everything with them. But it was just different with them than it was perhaps with some of the parrots. Or, you know, we had a roadrunner who was very, very, very old, older than any roadrunner we'd ever heard of. And so as he was getting near his time to go over the Rainbow Bridge, we would take him out on stage at lunch and let him run around and play and enjoy the sun and, you know, just have a good time, you know, and just make his life as special as we could, and, you know, until it was time, you know, keep him super happy, super comfortable, super, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, in that sense, we did have relationships with them. You know, or they bring you things.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hornbill that he used to bring me leaves when I was hosing out his enclosure with him. He'd come up to me and offer me stuff, you know.
Oh, how cute.
He'd be like, thank you.
Oh, how
thank
cute.
Thank you so much. I mean, there was cuteness all day.
It just leads me to the question of that, is this why they tell us then too? Because it's just a matter of trust, right? And your enclosed areas there were very open and very wildlife oriented.
Yeah.
And so it's an amazing thing to me that the predators would even come back. But
that they didn't come.
And is this why they tell you, because I live in an area where there is a lot of wildlife, and they tell you not to feed the wildlife. I mean, because maybe they might start trusting you and something might prey on them, or they, you know, it changes their natural nature. So to speak.
Yeah, it does. And the reason that our birds didn't just take off, including our parrots and things, is that that area where they were trained and where the show happened, that was kind of their safe, secure area. So if they would go any distance, and we had fly-offs. We did have fly-offs where they'd go out into the zoo and we'd have to go grab them. Not often, though. Very rarely. You know, where we'd have to go, okay, so-and-so took off or whatever. But it was that where they were safe. That was their comfort zone kind of in that area.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
if they went even a little bit away, sometimes it would be very uncomfortable for them. It would make them very insecure. If they couldn't see us, because we were part of that security as well, you know, they would get nervous. So there were times where one of the things that we would do sometimes, which is if a parrot took off and landed in a tree where they weren't supposed to land, we would constantly never take our eyes off them, but we would hide sometimes and do it where they couldn't see us. And then after a couple minutes, you knew they were thinking like, okay, I don't see anybody. I better fly down where I belong. You know? And they'd come in on their own, but we never took our eyes off them for 1 second. But, you know, they felt comfortable with us and in that area.
Oh, that's very cool. I just have to believe that going in to work every day was just sort of like a wildlife adventure. I mean, it had to be just the most wonderful, wonderful experience.
I pinched myself every day going, I can't believe that I actually get a paycheck to do this. and it was I considered it such a privilege to be able to care for God's creation and his creatures in such a direct way like that. And every day was different. Like, you never quite knew every day. It was the same in our routine, but you never knew what was going to happen. So every day was different. It wasn't monotonous. And, you know, there's always those days where you're going into work and maybe you're depressed or maybe you had a bad night, you know, whatever, but your spirits are low. But any time I went into work feeling like that, it would just fix the minute I got there. You know, just handling the birds, saying good morning, you know, whatever, getting into the day, it would just kind of go away, you know. It was a lift. It was great.
To me, it would be oh my gosh, what's going to eat me today? what's going to claw at me today? That it takes a special skill and a special calling, I do believe. And I am very, very inspired by how God did work in your life and how he lifted you to where he wanted you to be. I mean, that is just an amazing thing to me. So like here that we all feel like we have times when we have limitations and things, and look at this, God gave you great adventure and everything. You just had to put the hard work in, right?
Oh yeah. Lots of hard work, so much hard work that like most zookeepers, my body at some point just said, I can't take this anymore because, you know, my knees went, we all have arthritis everywhere because it's very, very physical. All that cleaning and lifting and in our case, running up and down stairs for the show and catching birds, releasing birds, all of that. It takes a toll. It takes a toll. And we're all, everyone I know pretty much is broken at least in one way, if not several ways, as far as their joints go and their backs. And you know, I probably have the body of an 80-year-old right now because of what I did, but I don't regret it for a single minute. You know, we
Absolutely.
Even had our wedding there at the zoo. I mean, it.
Oh,
that
you
was,
did?
That was home. And I wanted my bird in the wedding the way most people would probably want their children in their wedding if they had children. And we knew we couldn't bring them to Calvary Chapel because Pastor Chuck would have frowned on that probably. And so we had a pastor from there go out to the zoo and we used the theater and we actually trained some birds just for the wedding who had never been in shows before. Like one of our eagles had never been in a show before. And she was trained just to fly in the wedding and then used after that in shows. But we had them actually participate. We had a cockatoo fly our rings down. And,
goodness. Oh, wow.
You know,
I love that.
We had hornbills and we had one of our macaws come out and he climbed up on a stool in front of a microphone, kind of like a comedian stool. And we had him kind of, he was eating, but it looked like he was talking. And we played the marriage scene from The Princess Bride. So he got up there and did marriage. we just did all sorts of stuff for that wedding. And people said it was one of the most fun weddings they'd ever watched. Because it was like half wedding,
I'm
half
sure.
Virtual.
I'm sure. Oh, I saw the picture of you with the white cockatiel, and for some reason I couldn't load it again. And everything, but it was beautiful. That was just beautiful.
That was Scooter, and they were walking him out amongst the people in our reception while we were taking pictures. They were doing walkabouts, and they happened to be bringing him back right as we were taking the picture. So I said, give him to me. And we didn't know if he'd be afraid of my big dress, because we had to actually do training with the birds before the wedding who were going to fly on stage. We would have to take big dresses and big slips in our wedding colors and put them on stage and then fly the birds in practice training sessions to get them used to seeing that so that they wouldn't totally flip out when they came out during the wedding. And so a lot went into that. We had to do a lot of training with them, and my dress still scared some of them, but... it turned out fine. But yeah, we did a lot of rehearsing. So our stage area was beautiful in the months leading up to our wedding because we had fake flowers in the bleachers and all sorts of stuff so that the birds would get used to all of it. So.
Oh, how fun is that? That is just, it's been an amazing thing to hear all of this. Is there anything that you would like to share with everybody that God's put on your heart or anything about animals or at all that you'd like to share?
Just one of the things that I wanted to say was that, you know, especially in the climate nowadays, people, I don't think they fully understand how much people who work with animals, whether it be SeaWorld, whether it be a zoo, an accredited zoo, I'm talking about the good zoos, how much they love their animals. And it's like the love you have for your kids. keepers work so hard every day to take the absolute best care, to give those animals everything they need to be healthy, to be happy. You know, we protect them. If they're sick, we, you know, sit half the day holding on, you know, holding them, doing whatever we have to do to help them get well, give them their meds, all that kind of stuff. So much goes into really loving them. And, you know, you'll hear news stories about, oh, this zookeepers don't want this animal to go to this sanctuary or whatever. And one thing that you can bet on is that the people who know particular animals the best are their keepers. So maybe that animal wouldn't benefit from going to a sanctuary where they actually don't get as much medical care as they would where they're at or whatever. But there's so many factors that keepers have to take into. And they know those animals better than anybody else. And so I just kind of want to put that out there. And also, like, if there's people out there that are thinking about this career, you know, follow your dream. Go after your dreams. And, you know, if God's in it, he'll work it out and he'll let it come about. It, like I said, it's not a career for everybody because of the stamina that it requires, the physicality that it requires. Also just, you know, people don't realize how gross it is sometimes. Like, we clean poop all day.
Yeah.
This is what we do. And there's a lot of people that start to volunteer who all of a sudden are like, oh, my gosh. Like, I spent one whole day scrubbing poop out of an elephant barn off the walls, off the floor, off, you know, and I came home filthy. Like, I would come home with monkey pee in my hair on days I was volunteering, and I didn't care. Like, you know you're meant for the career when none of that bothers you, when you couldn't care less that you're covered in feces half the day. You know, then you know this is the job for you, but a lot of people expect it to just be, I get to play with animals all day, and they don't realize, no, you're going to get dirty, your body's going to fall apart, you are going to work harder than you've ever worked in your life and come home and jump in the shower and collapse, you know, and that's really what it's like. Now, there are those beautiful moments throughout the day too, but it's work. It's hard work. So
hard physical labor. Yeah. That,
yeah.
I would think, yeah. God gave you the strength and the stamina and got you there. And I am sure that, you know, I know I personally am grateful that there are people who have this innate quality with the animals, because I would never get to see some of the animals that I've gotten to see were they not being cared for and brought to us in this way.
Right. They're representatives. They really are. And I can't tell you how many people I know who are driven to conserve, because there are species going extinct left and right. And people care about what they've seen. And it does help people care about conservation. Also, zoos are kind of a modern ark in that they are saving endangered species, literally. And a lot goes into that, but there are animals that would be extinct if it weren't for what zoos and animal facilities were doing to help protect those species. So they're doing a very, very important work on many levels.
Yes, I it isn't like it used to be many, many years ago. You know, you just throw an animal in a cage and stuff like that. It's not. I was impressed with the outdoors and that the animals would actually come to you out in the wild like that. It was just really, really awesome to see.
Yeah, no,
very,
it's
very
nothing.
Cool.
It's nothing like that anymore. You know, and we're talking like accredited zoos, good zoos. I'm sure there's mom and pop people, you know, places where things are not good and those should not be in existence. But the good accredited zoos, it's nothing like it used to be. There's so much going on to preserve endangered species and all sorts of stuff. And there's animals that simply can't be released out into the wild for one reason or another. And they need a place to be cared for, too, you know.
Sure. Sure, if they're sick or something like that, yeah. Well,
yeah.
I would like to close the show and just if you have any closing remarks, and then just close it with a few comments.
Okay.
Do you have any closing remark for everybody?
One thing, I don't know, and this, I think the Lord gave this to me, but one thing that really, I don't know, that I guess I learned while I was working there is, you know, we all know, or many people know, Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. And being a zookeeper made that portion of scripture so alive to me because, you know, basically God is our shepherd. He tends us, he feeds us, he protects us. All of those things listed in that psalm, I was like, this is what I'm doing for the animals. Basically, I'm their shepherd, so to speak. I'm fully responsible for their well-being in every respect. And I know that the love and the tenderness that we all had as we took care of these birds or these animals, wherever we are, the immense love, and it's a joy to care for them. And there's so much love involved in caring for them and making sure that they're so good in every respect. And I thought, I feel this way towards the animals that I take care of. How much more does God, does he tenderly and joyfully take care of me in all those respects? And that's how he sees me, the way I see them, except on a much huger, greater, more wonderful level, you know? And so it helped me just feel...
You know
what?
That comes through, too. That comes through. That comes through your whole personality. So it helps you to feel...
cared for, loved, you know, in the sense that I understand what it's like to care for beings like, you know, lower than me or whatever, to care for other creatures in that way. And I was like, he cares for us with even more love and even more tenderness and even more concern for the details of our life to make sure everything's, you know, the way that it should and to work things out for our good and all of that. So it kind of, it just kind of made that scripture more alive to me after I had that job.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I believe that God spoke to me through doing this is that this is encouragement for those who seem to be discouraged or feel like they're at a standstill or anything. I pray that this will, that God will use this to encourage them that things are possible that they never, ever dreamed of. And,
It's never really, in my wildest dreams did I think I would get to do what I did, really. So, and that was, he worked it out.
Well, I think, too, that I'm impressed with the volunteering you did, the hard work that you did before, and the timing. I am not one to be that patient, and so God's timing sometimes is a real test to me, but I think this is a testimony to of God's timing and his intricacy in how he works things out and moves, and that if anyone feels like they're in a stalemate or they're being held back or the timing is very, very slow to be encouraged, you know, that God is working for their good. You know, he works all things together for our good, and that's who he is and how he views us. And I am just blessed by this whole thing. I want to thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you'll do it again so that we can talk about specific things like maybe training a parrot or something like that. Would you join us again?
Okay. Sure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome, honey. You're welcome. And it's just been so fun. And I just love your personality and your sense of humor. So keep it up. And I'm going to close us in prayer. And then we'll just say goodbye to everybody. Father, I thank you so much for this beautiful spirit that you put within Marilyn. I thank you, Lord, that you delivered her from so much and brought her to the place where she needed to be. And now she has a new journey with her family and her son and her little business. Lord, I pray that you would just bless us. I pray that anyone listening would be encouraged, Lord, by this and that they would look for you to mold and shape their lives, Lord, and to be the deliverer of all things and the answer to all things. We pray, thanking you, Lord, for these blessings. And we just love you, Father. We thank you and pray this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
Amen, kiddo. And we will see you at church.
Yes, you will.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay. Bye.